We are back on the Bengals Beat Podcast. Lindsey Patterson, Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. It's a little bit early. I haven't had my second cup of coffee. I will have it soon, but I'm on my first cup still. So I'm still, you know, I'm not a huge morning person, but I'm doing okay.
Tyler, how do you make your coffee?
How do I make my coffee? Man, that'd be a good question of the week. So I like it with a little bit of cream. It's almost black. People make fun of me because it's near black. And I put, you guys are definitely going to make fun of me with this. I put 3 spoons of sugar in there.
Tyler, so it's a little bit. You can do whatever you want. That's fine.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Charlie. My coffee's a little sweet, but it's real strong. Little cream, 3 teaspoons of sugar, stir it. And yes, my Keurig is on and popping every morning.
What about you?
I'm a coffee guy. I drink a cup of iced coffee every single day.
Do you make a homemade iced coffee? Because I've been watching it a little bit on social media and a lot of people have been doing that and I kind of want to do it now.
Yeah, so I can, but if I'm in a, but it's not as good as if I go somewhere else to get it. So if I'm really going to treat myself, I'll go out and get a nice coffee. But 5 out of 7 days a week, I'll make my own iced coffee.
That sounds really great right now because I have yet to have coffee. I need all the cream in the world. So my coffee normally looks a little bit like milk, but I recommend it. You can't go wrong with that.
So where do you get your coffee, Lindsay?
So here's the thing. I used to, and I'm so guilty of this. I would go to Starbucks every morning and I would get the cheap coffee, like the $2.95 grande pike roast, little bit of cream, a little bit of sugar. But now my parents heard that I was doing that every day and they bought me a Keurig. So I make my coffee at home. I save a little money and I just go cream, sugar. Nothing else is really fancy in it. But yeah, I have a coffee every morning from home unless I'm on the road and I can go through the drive-thru. And, you know, Starbucks is Starbucks. Nobody can really beat the way they make coffee. But we'll move on. I know nobody really cares about what coffee I like, but moving on to the NFL draft is obviously in the books a few days after the Bengals made their last pick. Any new observations for you guys? Because we obviously recorded a podcast night one, night two, and then you wrap up night three. A few days later, had a chance to obviously observe what the Bengals were able to do during NFL draft weekend. Any new changes in your thoughts?
Well, I did write, I encourage our listeners to go on Cincinnati.com. I wrote almost 900 words on the Bengals draft. I broke every position down, every round down, every player down that the Bengals drafted. So definitely go on Cincinnati.com and check that out. But they did draft the most offensive linemen and defensive linemen in team history since the draft became 7 rounds. So it was very obvious the position groups they wanted to address and wanted to bolster and needed to improve this coming season. Now, is it an A-plus draft? I want to go that far. I will go ahead and give them a grade on this podcast because I already gave it online. I gave them a B. And the reason why I gave them a B is because I don't project many starters out of this draft. Now, I do think they'll have some players making a significant impact. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase will have a significant impact and start year one. Jackson Carmen maybe start at right guard in year one. McPherson, starting kicker. So that's why I think it's a successful draft. I don't think it's an A draft, but I definitely would give them a B. And I do think that they should feel happy about what they did in the draft. Now, again, I will say it until for the next 5 years. I do think they should have drafted Penei Sewell or Rashawn Slater with that 5 pick, but I understand why they drafted Ja'Marr Chase. I get it. Trust me, I understand why. But it's funny because I have listened to former players and talked to former players, and they still ask me, or when they're on TV or radio, they still question that number 5 pick. And they all say they, and it's almost like we're preaching the same language. They all say they get it why the Bengals drafted Ja'Marr Chase, but they still can't fully grasp why they did not bolster that offensive line with a player that a lot of people think, I think this might be, you know, too premature to say, but a lot of people are saying that Penei Sewell could be a Hall of Famer, Rashawn Slater could be at least an All-Pro. I think that's too much pressure to put on players at the very beginning, and, you know, it's premature to say that at the bit when they haven't played a NFL down. But I do think that would have bolstered the offensive line for years to come and protect Joe Burrow. But they have a dynamic receiving corps, which we'll talk later about in the podcast. He has established chemistry with Ja'Marr Chase, and he's an X receiver, and that's what the Bengals, they did need since A.J. Green left to go to the Arizona Cardinals. So A.J. Green, Tyler Boyd in the slot, T. Higgins on the outside, that gives the Bengals a really good receiving combination. And their offensive line, which we'll talk in the podcast, improved a little bit. The defense, they got a lot of draft picks at the defensive side. And I think that they'll play, but I don't know. I don't think they'll play significantly in year one. But that's not saying they won't have an impact.
So when I think of this draft, I just keep coming back to Jackson Carmen and kind of look at this offseason for a whole for a second. I think that Riley Reiff was the best offensive tackle to change teams this offseason, since Trent Williams and Taylor Moten and Darrell Williams and Cam Robinson stayed where they were. And then Jackson Carmen, I had him probably at maybe the number three guard in this class behind Landon Dickerson and behind Elijah Vera Tucker. Those guys wouldn't have been available at 38 to the Bengals anyway. So you could look at what the Bengals did this free agency and draft and say they got the best tackle who changed teams. They got the third best guard in the draft. They have a center who this coaching staff gave an extension to. They have a guard and two guards really, and Quentin Spain and Xavier Suofilo competing for a spot that this coaching staff signed. And then you have Jonah Williams, who was this coaching staff and front office's first round pick together. You can say that these are their guys, kind of like we even say that these are Lou Anarumo's guys in the secondary now. You can make the case that these are Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan's guys on the offensive line. And again, the biggest surprise to me for the weekend was that they're categorizing Jackson Carmen a guard, because that's such a big investment to make in a guard. It's the biggest investment the Bengals have made in a guard since Kevin Zeitler. And that ended up being one of the best picks, first round picks the Bengals have made in the last 9 years. So because they, I guess, kind of defied, you know, a consensus big board or a national ranking and went with a guy in Jackson Carmen so early ahead of someone like Samuel Cosmi. Obviously, they passed on Tevin Jenkins, Walker Little, Liam Eichenberg. That says a lot about how they see him. And I keep going back to that now. He has to be a good guard because they just invested a ton in that being the case.
Well, let me say something. I can't say that Riley Reiff is better than a player like Orlando Brown. That he switched teams, and
free agency was what I meant.
Oh, okay. Well, I will probably put Villanueva, the guy the Ravens got from the Steelers, a little bit better than Riley Reiff. So I do think Riley Reiff is a good player. I wouldn't say he's the best tackle to switch teams, though.
But here's the thing. So what I meant was in free agency. Thank you for correcting me there. I was looking at my free agent big board from back in March before Orlando Brown was on it. But I do think Riley Reiff is a better player than Alejandro Villanueva. And aside from him, the only other guys in this conversation are guys like Russell Okung and Rick Wagner and, you know, Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz. Those two guys have injury questions as well. So I don't think that's that crazy to say that Reiff, you know, he's right there with Villanueva. I would have him above Villanueva as the best free agent tackle in this class.
Okay, as long as you don't have him over Orlando Brown. I was about to say, like, what?
He wasn't available at the time. And kind of going back at that the offensive line comment, Tyler, you made about Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater. I know we've talked about the Jamar Chase, getting Jamar Chase at five. I think people, they understand it, obviously protecting Joe Burrow. But I want to go back to the comment. Look, I think Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater are going to be great in the NFL. But these early comments of all pro, Hall of Famer, before any guy has even taken the field, that's a lot. That's a lot coming from
and I said that too. I did say that.
I don't think that we can say anybody's a Hall of Famer yet before they take the field. They could all have great careers, and to be determined. If they end up living that out, then good for Sewell and Rashawn Slater. I think one thing nationally that keeps getting ignored, and I'm one person, and I'm one of the people who I do appreciate the national media. I listen to them. I talk to them. I want to hear from them. I think a lot of people just ignored what Cincinnati was doing when it comes to adding Riley Reiff in the offseason. I'm not saying he's going to be the right tackle for years to come. Look, it might be a one-year deal, but the Bengals did things to their offensive line. And yes, Jonah Williams has to stay healthy, but it did get better. We're going to get to that in just a moment, but this is my take of you know, a couple of days after the draft. Obviously, Jackson Carmen, to be determined what he's going to be able to do at guard. I think the D-line, I mean, adding depth where they needed it on both sides. We've talked plenty about adding to the trenches. They were able to do that. You get Cam Sample. I still think Joseph Osai is going to be a steal for the defense. The fourth round trade allowed them to get Evan McPherson. Obviously, a lot of people thought that was early on a kicker, but they had the extra pick, so that was helpful. And Chris Evans could end up being a Geo replacement in what they need in the running back room. Look, a lot can happen over the next few months or even a couple years to determine what this draft class is really going to be. But yeah, I mean, I feel like if you're looking at what this team needed to do, they replaced and added to departments that they needed extra guys in. And I felt like it overall was pretty good. I don't think you can look at it and say the Bengals ignored any position.
So I know both of you hate this, but give the Bengals a grade. I gave them a grade. I gave them a B. Give them a grade for their draft.
I go first. We're on the same page. I'll give them a B. And just the crucial thing I think is so important to keep in mind when you're grading a draft is if the Bengals get four or five starters or even fringe starters, rotation players in this draft, then that is an incredible draft. That's the point in trading back. You get more bites at the apple to, again, get as many chances as you can because the hit rate in the draft is so low. So while, you know, the Bengals could have been more aggressive in the first round getting an offensive lineman, you can argue about the offensive lineman they got in the second round. They still have a ton of bites at the apple to get, you know, four starters and get an incredible draft if that ends up being the case.
Yeah, I'd say in the B department. I think that's fair. I think that, you know, one knock a little bit off of obviously feeling like they got the kicker early, but I still feel like the fourth round allowed them to do that. But I think B is fair, to be determined on what this draft class does. You could say the same thing for the 2020 draft class when you look at the linebacker room. And I think that could be determined over the next 2 years, what those guys from year one will do year two and year three. And the grade could always get higher. I know I give grades a hard time, but I'm one of the people that will read them the next day. So obviously people have an interest in it. We'll go back to the Bengals offensive line because that's something we've talked about for, it feels like 2 years now. And we've just mentioned it, Riley Reiff in the offseason, Jackson Carmen, more than likely at the moment, look, all of this could change. And I still feel like the Bengals will add to the offensive line room before they get to camp in July. You get Jackson Carmen at right guard, to be determined on the left guard starter at the moment. I have Quentin Spain penciled in, but it could be between him and Xavier Suofilo. Obviously, Jonah Williams, left tackle, Trey Hopkins to be determined. But do you think, because I had just mentioned it, obviously the national attention is the Bengals, you know, passing on Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater in the first round and going Jamar Chase. Do you think this offensive line improved, though, from 2020 to where they're at now?
Well, I know from our offensive line conversations that, Lindsay, you do not want Xavier Suofilo to be a starter this coming season.
Not even that.
You want Quinn Spain in there with Jackson Carmen at right guard.
And I'm not against a Xavier and Quentin battle for left guard. Honestly, you want to put the best five players out there. And you have Frank Pollock working on him. So I think his opinion in the room is going to matter when it comes to holding offensive linemen week one in September.
Okay. So I do think the Bengals offensive line improved, and I thought it was interesting that Pro Football Focus had them as one of the most improved offensive line. I think they were fourth on the list, if I'm not mistaken, behind the Vikings, Chiefs, and Chargers. Now, I do think overall, if I'm looking at the entire NFL, the Chiefs had the biggest improvement along their offensive line, signing, well, trading for Orlando Brown and getting Joe Tooney. I think they have like four new starters along their offensive line. And then I would have the Chargers at two because they have four new starters. We all talked about Rashad Slater, but Corey Linsley's a Pro Bowl center. For the Bengals, now they did improve. I will say that. It's to be determined if Jackson Carmen is going to start. I know the Bengals want him to, definitely want him to. The right guard is going to be an adjustment. He said that, the coaches have said that. But from what I've heard from Willie Anderson, what I've heard from coaches is he's got the football acumen. He's smart enough to make that transition inside. So that would be a good move for them because he has the tools and the athletic ability to play guard and be a productive guard, and then maybe in the future move back out to tackle. Riley Reiff, as Charlie said, I think he was one of the best tackle acquisitions this offseason via trade and free agency. I won't say he's the best, but it's an upgrade we can all admit over Bobby Hart. So, and then Quinn Spain. Now, we can say Quinn Spain is it. Kind of newish acquisition because last year he signed on the fly, didn't really have any practice time. It was plugged right in. So now he has a full off season under his belt, learning the system. Things will slow down for him. So, and then I think he will be a better player for the Bengals this year because he has more time to adjust and he's more comfortable into the system. So if we want to count him as a newish addition, I wouldn't argue with you there. So then overall, you're going to have Jonah Williams at left tackle. You're going to have left guard, probably Quinn Spain. Center, Trey Hopkins. By what I'm hearing, he's recovering well. He wants to return week one. Jury's still out on that, but that's what he's targeting. He's on the same track as Joe Burrow. They both want to return week one. There's my Joe Burrow update, by the way. I said I was going to get a Joe Burrow update in every single podcast now. Right guard. You probably have Jackson Carmen. Could be Xavier Suafilo said, so we'll see how much she gets acclimated into the NFL. I'm talking about Jackson, but they do want him to start. Second round pick. He has the ability to start. And then right tackle, what we already talked about, Riley Reiff. Upgrade over Bobby Hart. Think he's got a veteran presence, could be a veteran leader along that offensive line. So yes, that offensive line is better. It's improved. Is it the best? I can't say that, but probably in the top, I wouldn't argue with Pro Football Focus. They can say top four. I would definitely put them in the top eight-ish, but they could be top four. I have to look at the entire NFL and all their offensive line adjustments. And the offseason isn't over as well. There could be players added on teams now after, well, there will be other offensive linemen added to teams after the draft as settled and done. So the Bengals did improve the offensive line. I do give them credit, and it's an area that they needed to improve. Is it the most improved in the NFL? No, but it's up there. So credit to the team for addressing an area that needed to be addressed.
It is important to consider, though, and again, I literally a couple minutes ago just gave credit for the ways and path the Bengals did take to improve their offensive line. But the Chargers and the Chiefs did make or did put more resources into improving it. Keep that in mind. The Bengals also had the most resources to improve it. They had some of the most cap space in the NFL, and they had the number 5 and number 38 overall picks. The Bengals had multiple chances to be more aggressive than the Chiefs and Chargers. But, you look at what the Chargers did. They had a first-round pick. that had Matt Filer, a guard who was one of my favorite free agents in this class and was a guy I had high on my big board for the Bengals. They added Corey Lindsley, who's obviously is a very quality player. And then the Chiefs, they trade a first round pick for Orlando Brown. They made Joe Tooney the highest paid guard in football. They're bringing Laurent Duvernay-Tardif back. They got Creed Humphrey, who I thought was as good as any center in this class, maybe behind Landon Dickerson. Those teams invested more resources in their offensive lines during the offseason. And that's why we're in a position now where we're saying the Bengals were fourth and not first. The Bengals, you know, could have been first. That's a possibility that could have happened. But instead, they were really, and I would argue, even more aggressive at improving their pass rush and also wide receiver, because the biggest resource they had all offseason was used on Jamar Chase. So, again, while the Bengals did do a lot to address their offensive line, there were teams that did more, and the Bengals arguably invested more in their pass rush.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you look at what Kansas City Chiefs did, and they used every avenue to upgrade their offensive line. I know a lot of people want to point at the Super Bowl and said, look what happened there. They had all the playmakers in the world, but if you don't have an offensive line, you're not going anywhere. And the Kansas City Chiefs did that. And as you mentioned, the Bengals, they could have done that. They could have put even more resources in it. And that's why they're not. That's why they're not number one when it comes to the most improved offensive lines. I do think they did add to the room, and they do have some depth and obviously some developmental pieces. And I think Frank Pollock, Lewis Reddick, who is one of my favorites over on ESPN, even said it. He said the offensive line coach is probably the most important staff member on the team. And they do have that in Frank Pollock. So we'll see what happens by the time they get to training camp. But I still think they will add more bodies in the room. We'll go to the wide receiver room right now. This was a little bit of a topic of discussion over on Sunday. Pro Football Focus put this out here. You have T. Higgins. You have Tyler Boyd. You have Jamar Chase. And he added, if the Bengals have the best wide receiver room in the AFC North. Look, I put easily. I know I knew what would happen in my mentions, and it actually wasn't that bad. There were people that were coming at me with the Browns wide receiver room. And I know everybody wants to put Odell out there and say, well, they got Odell. I'm sorry, Odell hasn't been himself for a while. And this is a hot take, and I will probably get demolished for this. I liked the Browns offense without Odell last year. And that's when they started to go on a little bit of a run. So, yeah, I put the Cincinnati Bengals over the Cleveland Browns in the wide receiver room. This is just the AFC North. I'm not talking about the AFC overall, because that's a whole nother topic of discussion. But where would you put this team right now in the North?
So Lindsay, you put the Bengals number one in the division.
No, their wide receiver room, not their team.
Their wide receiver room.
Yeah.
And so who do you have? Do you have the Browns number two?
Yeah.
Who do you have number three?
I'd have the Steelers. No, you know what? Oh. I wouldn't have the Steelers. That's a really good discussion. Who I'd have number three.
Because this is what we're having right now.
It's hit or miss for me. It's hit or miss for me at number three. I like some of the Ravens wide receivers, but I think right now when it comes to one and two, I just asked you who the best team was in the AFC North for the wide receiver room. And that's mm-hmm. why I would have the Bengals at one. And just to make the Cleveland crowd happy, I'd put the Browns at number two. But just like I mentioned, I think the quick backlash I get is, but they have Odell. And I'm sorry. I don't think he's been himself for a while, and their offense looked better without him. That's my hot take.
Wow. And then, so you're torn between the Steelers and the Ravens.
I'm torn right now. Who would have my three and four? I'd say that, to be honest.
Okay. So I'll have to say the Browns still number one. And I get it. When Odell Beckham is on the field, Baker Mayfield tends to key in on him. And that's why the Browns offense isn't that great. They tend to force Odell Beckham the football and forget that they have two really good running backs and Jarvis Landry, who's a multi-time Pro Bowler, and Rashard Higgins, who can play himself. And that's why I think the Browns offense doesn't function as well with him on the field, because everybody thinks, oh my gosh, we have Odell Beckham on the field. We need to get him the ball. When just play football, and then he's a good receiver, so naturally, sometimes he's going to get open. More times than not, he's going to get open. So you can throw him the football when he's open and not just try to force him it all the time. So that's why I think the Browns offense doesn't operate well with Odell on the field, but that can change. I still have them number one because Odell Beckham's a multi-time Pro Bowler. Jarvis Landry's a multi-time Pro Bowler. Odell has not been healthy the past few years. I think that he's already said this year he feels as healthy as ever. Now, again, I'm a person that you got to walk the walk. He can talk the talk, but walk the walk in the field. Prove to me and all the NFL that you're healthy on the field. Jarvis Landry, like I said, he's been to the Pro Bowler multiple times. Rashard Higgins, he can play. The Bengals, they don't have a Pro Bowler yet. Now, Tyler Boyd, he could have been a Pro Bowler and maybe even last year, the year before. But for some reason, Bengals fans could argue it, he has not been a Pro Bowler. But he's played at an, I'll say, near Pro Bowl level for the past few seasons. T. Higgins, second year in the league, had a great first year last year, almost broke receiving multiple receiving records, got hurt in the last game, wasn't able to finish out the season. Ja'Marr Chase, we all think he's going to be a really good NFL wide receiver. Already a good rapport with Joe Burrow. Those three, yes, but I still can't put them over the Browns. I do have the Bengals number two, though. And that's, I think, a testament to what I think Ja'Marr Chase is going to be, what I think T. Higgins is going to be next year, and then also Tyler Boyd continuing to do himself. I'll have the Steelers at number three. And a lot of Steelers fans and a lot of casual fans would probably, some could put the Steelers number one because of what they did at the beginning of last season and towards the middle. They had a really good passing attack and it just fell off a cliff when Ben Roethlisberger's arm just waned last season. But you got Juju, you got Dante Johnson, you got Claypool. Those are pretty good receivers. Juju's probably the household name because he's been to the Pro Bowl and he likes to do his antics before and after the game, which Bengals fans hate. He's still a good, solid wide receiver. Four, of course, I have the Baltimore Ravens. Hollywood Brown's a good deep threat. Doesn't really catch passes over the middle because he's small. Sammy Watkins, I'm unsure about him because he's getting a little bit older. He's been nicked up. He's switching teams with the Chiefs. He was like their third option, but I think he can still make some plays in Baltimore. And then the Ravens drafted the first round wide receiver to Rashad Bateman. I do think he's going to be pretty good. I don't think he's at the level of a Ja'Marr Chase, but I think he'll have an impact in Baltimore. So Ravens at four, and that's also because the Ravens want to play smash mouth football and run the ball 35 times a game. So I'll have the Ravens at four, but I cannot have the Bengals at number one because, one, I've seen Odell play at a level that no other Bengals receiver has played yet. And that's not a knock against any Bengals receiver, but Odell was top four receiver in the league. Yes, he hasn't played at that level in a while, but I do think he can get close to that level this year. And he says he's healthy. And Jarvis Landry is probably the, you can make a good case that he's the best number two receiver in the league. I'm not saying he is, but you can make a solid case that he is. So that's why I have the Browns number one, Bengals two, Steelers three, Ravens four.
I heard a lot of was for Odell. A lot of was in there.
Yeah, there. I mean, he has been hurt, but again, which Bengals receiver has ever played at the level of Odell Beckham?
I'm talking now. I'm not talking about
Tyler Boyd right now better than Odell Beckham?
I haven't seen Odell play like Odell in a while. That's my point. I'm not talking about like their past resume. I'm talking about
Okay, right now, if you needed both healthy, needed to win one game, you draft one receiver in the AFC North, who are you drafting?
Which Odell am I getting?
I said all healthy. Everybody's healthy.
But everyone's healthy, but Odell's also coming off a major knee injury.
Oh, again, pick a receiver.
I take Tyler Boyd.
You're taking Tyler Boyd too, Lindsay?
I'm letting Charlie rank his because I definitely stepped in there because I was just ready. When I heard what for Odell, I was like, come on. When has he been the former Odell? I know a lot of people look at what he once was, and that's great, and that's awesome. And look, he might come out and just be the same guy he once was. But at the moment, I don't believe the Browns wide receivers are better than what the Bengals have. And I can be proved wrong. We can check the tape at the end of the season. But that's how I feel now.
I'm gonna love rolling back this tape and be like, yo, I told you guys, I tried to tell you. Go ahead, Charlotte.
Just real quick, I take the Bengals over the Browns, but it just reminds me of probably the best football game I saw last year, which was when the Bengals played the Browns at Paul Brown Stadium, and like Rashard Higgins and Donovan Peoples-Jones were making these acrobatic catches. Like Peoples-Jones had this insane catch for his first NFL catch, and it was the same game Odell got hurt, and that doesn't factor in. I just think that was it's funny linking these teams wide receivers together, considering how well the Browns took advantage of an undermanned Bengals secondary last season at Paul Brown Stadium.
Man, that was, I feel like we're going to be rolling the tape on a lot of our podcasts after the draft, after the wide receiver room, the offensive line room to be determined. But I know I feel confident in saying that. And that's why I said it. I said, I felt easily, you could say.
Yeah, easily was strong.
I did put a little bit of a strong word out there when I said the Bengals had the better wide receiver room in the AFC North. I think when you talk overall in the NFL, I wouldn't put them at number one. That's a whole nother topic for discussion, which I'm sure we will have in the future. But as of now, I would put them number one in the wide receiver room in the AFC North. We'll move along because we heard from Brian Callahan in the post-game press conferences after the draft that Joe Mixon, it seems like he's going to have more of an impact. He even said, he's like, I'd like them to have him out there every down if possible. Obviously, he's coming back from an injury. How's Joe Mixon going to be producing with this offense going into 2021?
Well, he's definitely going to be more involved in the passing attack, especially now that Giovanni Bernard is now in Tampa Bay. He showed signs before he got hurt that he's a capable pass catching running back, but I do believe that they're going to hand him the football. At least I hope, because I've been saying it since I became a Bengals beat reporter, that they need to give Joe Mixon the football and he needs to be more of a focal point of the offense. Because yes, I know everybody says Joe Burrow, the number one guy, but you can make a strong argument that Joe Mixon is the best player and most explosive player on the Bengals offense. I do think they need to feature him a little bit more, not to the point where, you know, you're wearing him out, but give him 20 to 25 carries a game. I would say probably 20, but 25 touches a game. So 20 carries, five passing opportunities. And I think that's a pretty good number to keep him fresh throughout the season. But, you know, last year was obviously a down year playing just six games, but he was coming off 2018 rushed for over 1,000 yards, 2019 rushed for over 1,000 yards. And those were behind offensive lines that were probably sub-mediocre. We can all admit that. Now the Bengals offensive line is a little bit improved, got a new offensive line coach, run game coordinator, Frank Pollock. So I'm expecting a bigger season out of Joe Mixon this year. And if you're a fantasy football player, fantasy football owner, I would definitely consider drafting him early, because Joe Mixon, from what I've heard, from what people have told me, he is expecting to have a much better season than obviously he had in 2020 with just six games. And I would expect him to cross the 1,000-yard rushing threshold again in 2021.
Well, he kind of has to. When you make that investment in making him one of the top 10 highest paid running backs in football, I just think it's important context to remember, when was the last time we saw Joe Mixon on the field? It was in Indianapolis. It was in the fourth quarter as the Bengals were kind of going back and forth with the Colts, and Joe Mixon got benched in that game for Giovanni Bernard. We were having a similar conversation last season. Joe Mixon's going to be more involved on third downs. Joe Mixon's going to be more involved as a pass catcher. Now, the difference is the Bengals have kind of acted on it and kind of forced their hand in that way by getting rid of Giovanni Bernard. But you would think that coming off that contract extension, the opportunity was there for Joe Mixon to even be in that role some last season, and it didn't happen. So this is kind of a pressure season for Joe Mixon. Obviously, he's already under contract. The franchise strongly believes in him, but what they need him to do based off what they've invested in the running back position compared to the rest of the league, it's crucial to the state of the offense that is what ends up happening, or else you're going to see a 6th-round pick playing a more featured role in the offense than probably most 6th-round picks. Yeah.
So let me say something real quick. Probably nobody knows this, but Joe Mixon actually got hurt during that Indianapolis game. He did not get benched. He got hurt during the game. Zach Taylor and the Bengals didn't say it, but he did. And so that's why he wasn't in. And then I asked Zach Taylor after the press conference, why wasn't Joe Mixon in the game? Was he hurt? Zach Taylor said no. But Joe Mixon did get hurt during that game.
Well then why was Joe Mixon on the bench in those situations all season?
Well, no, I'm not saying he wasn't playing all season, but he got hurt during that game. You said he got benched, but he did not get benched. He got hurt during that game. And they wanted to use Giovanni Bernard as a third down back and give Joe Mixon a breather weeks 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Now, same thing with week 6, but he wasn't given an opportunity to be in on third down because he got hurt. And that's why he didn't play for the rest of the season. He hurt his foot in week 6.
Is that why they handed the ball to Samaje Perine on 4th down? Because he was hurt?
Which are you talking about, which week?
That same week. They did like the fullback dive on 4th and 1.
Yes,
but he was hurt. That was the last play Joe Mixon played.
Yes.
He was hurt on that play?
He was hurt.
All right.
Now we know. Now we know. And I think if Joe Mixon can stay healthy, obviously they have to use him. But at the moment, he has to prove that he can stay on the field and healthy for a full season. Moving on. Questions of the week. Tyler, go ahead.
So my first question of the week is, now after the draft is settled, Vegas still has the Bengals at 6.5 wins. Do you agree with Vegas or disagree with Vegas? And if you disagree, how many wins do you have the Bengals win total in 2021?
With the extra game right now, and if Joe Burrow is healthy for the full season, I have them right about 8 wins.
I'm at 7, okay. But let's have a longer conversation in August.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. I mean, right now in May, I say 8 wins, but look, there's a lot of factors in it. And I do feel like Joe Burrow is going to start the season week 1 and play from week 1 on. Hopefully he's healthy for the whole season. But I'd say, yeah, I'm stuck at 8 right now with the extra game.
Okay, so Lindsay at 8, Charlie at 7. I have them at 6. Second question. Bleacher Report just came out with a post-draft power rankings. They have Chiefs at – oh, I thought – okay. Tampa Bay at 1, Chiefs at 2. Now, the Bengals, however, they come in at 27. Now, last place is the Houston Texans. Second to last is Detroit Lions. 30th is the Jets. 29th is the Jaguars, followed by Philadelphia, then the Bengals. The few teams ahead of the Bengals are the Carolina Panthers, Las Vegas Raiders, Atlanta Falcons, Minnesota Vikings. Do you agree with Bleacher Report's 27th ranking of the Bengals post-draft?
I'll say this right now. Yeah. I mean, they have to prove that they can win football games. Obviously we've seen the back-to-back seasons in the end. So we've talked numerous times about the Joe Burrow injury. And if he would have played, they would have probably had a few more wins in the 2020 season, but yeah, no, I'd say that. I'd say that's about right until they can prove wrong.
Again, let's talk in August. You know what I mean? I'm at kind of a soft 7 wins right now, but we'll get there.
We'll get there.
Charlie's dodging the questions like Lindsay.
No, but I mean, to be completely honest, we don't even know what the starting offensive line is going to look like, even though they have added to it in free agency. I think there's only a few that you could say that guy's definitely going to be starting in his position. Frank Pollock's going to put the best five guys out there, and it's a Joe Burrow factor for me. I got to see where Joe Burrow is in August and September. Obviously, he's coming off a major injury, and even though that he is ahead of schedule, you know, just wait to see how this offense works together. He's not going to play in any preseason games, and he didn't last season. I don't think Joe Burrow should ever play in a preseason game again. He proved his rookie year he doesn't need to. But yeah, I mean, the conversation for division rankings, Bengals rankings, where you'd put them, it's very hard to tell in May. When we get some training camp under our belt, seeing where these guys are in different position battles, what their defense looks like. Obviously, they've added to both rooms, free agency and the NFL draft. But where you put the Bengals right now, I mean, it's going to be a while, but at some point I will make this comment. We don't need to get into this topic right now. It'll be a future conversation. At some point, the Bengals have to be in that conversation of when are they finally going to compete? Because the years are going to go by really fast on this rookie contract.
Yeah, that is true. I do think it's interesting that Bleacher Report had the Cleveland Browns at number 4. And the Baltimore Ravens at 6, and they had Pittsburgh at number 14. So they had the three other AFC North teams ranked pretty high.
They also also gave the Bengals an F for the Ja'Marr Chase pick. So I don't know how much I put into Bleacher Report.
They did. I did not. That is a harsh grade. I wouldn't give them an F. I'm pretty sure. I know why they gave them F. I can probably guess what they said in their summary of why they gave the Bengals an F. But yeah, that's interesting. Well, I guess no love for the Bengals from Bleacher Report. My third question is a Rez question for Charlie. Charlie, give our listeners a Rez update.
So they have the best offense in baseball, but they're under 500. And I think that says a lot about the state of the team. They can win any game. They have threats up and down the lineup, but it's all about putting it together, specifically getting more consistent contributions from the bullpen. That can be the difference between the playoffs and staying at home.
To be determined with the Cincinnati Reds, we will see. I know Charlie has plenty online at cincinnati.com, from Reds to Bengals. Tyler, Charlie, what else is up there?
So I have a full assessment of the Bengals 2021 draft. Go read it. I wrote a whole lot on it. I definitely revealed the grade during this podcast, but the grade is at the very end. I have an analysis of why I gave them the grade, though, before. And also coming up later this week, I have a feature on Jackson Carmen.
Yeah, stay tuned for more Bengals projects for me, but lots of Reds coverage this week. Amir Garrett's had an interesting week. I have a story coming up on Ryan Hendricks and his interesting journey, stuff like that. So stay tuned.
Check it out. We do have a BBP Extra. Executive Director of the Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy, talks everything Senior Bowl in the Cincinnati Bengals. Thank you for joining us on the Bengals Beat Podcast. We're back on the Bengals Beat Podcast over on the Cincinnati Inquirer, joined by one of the best over in college football, Jim Nagy, Executive Director of the Senior Bowl. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great, Lindsay. It's great being back on with you. I feel like it's been since last draft.
Yeah, last draft, the Bengals are using all your Senior Bowl guys right now. And I actually want to back it up just a little bit. How much have you felt the Senior Bowl has changed just over the years?
I started coming to the game as a scout in 1998, so it's been a long time. the biggest game changer for us this year was the new stadium. But no, it's always been a great game. It's always been really important. What I've tried to do a little bit differently is just really focus on the draft process and, you know, bringing in the best players, whether they have ties to the SEC or our local schools, just trying to bring in the best guys regardless of where they came from. But it's been a great game forever. That's why we have 57 Hall of Famers. But no, just really concentrating in what we've tried to do in the last 3 years is pull back the curtain and really engage fans and engage players and, show them our process and no secrets, and just want everyone to see what we're doing here.
One of the things I heard from after some of the media press conferences with the Cincinnati Bengals and the coaching staff is they said their scouting season really starts with the Senior Bowl. What's that like when you hear NFL coaches say that?
Yeah, it means a ton. You know, when you hear guys from around the league, whether they say it in press conferences after the draft or, you know, just around our game when they're here in Mobile or after when they follow up and, you know, tell you how important the week is and the good job we're doing. I mean, that's the highest praise for me, because those are all the guys that I've been in the league with for the last 20 years. So it means a ton coming from them. And I mean, I always valued the game significantly when I was in the NFL, and that's why I took the job, because I believe in the value of the game. So yeah, Zach Taylor hit me up right after the draft and said, "Hey man, you better watch my press conference. I talked about the Senior Bowl quite a bit." So it's always nice to hear those guys say nice things.
Well, we'll get to the guys that they picked. I hear a lot of Carl Lawson comparison when it's Cam Sample. What does he bring to the Bengals defense? What do you think he's going to bring to the room?
Versatility, power, you know, relentlessness, high motor. He, you know, technique. He had a really nice week here at the Senior Bowl. So, you know, I really kind of felt like the fourth round was the floor for Cam. I really thought coming into the week he was more of a fifth round guy, and then talking to guys around the league, it sounded like he had a good chance of going in the top 100, somewhere in the first three rounds. But for him to go early in four, that's still a nice jump for him. And he's a versatile guy. He really knows how to use his hands. He's got power. He can rush inside over guards. He's kind of a mismatch that way. And he's got enough, like he's got a lot of know-how in terms of rushing the passer and setting guys up on the edge. Like he's not the longest guy in the world, you know, out there against tackles, but he really's got a nice feel for how to rush and where the quarterback is. So, yeah, that was a really nice addition. At minimum, he's going to get in the field, I would think. I haven't talked to Zach about this, but at minimum, I think he would get on the field in sub situations and, you know, be part of the rush package next year as a rookie.
When you think about the Bengals offensive line, it's obviously a topic of discussion. You got to protect the franchise quarterback and Joe Burrow, and the Bengals added to their offensive line. Deontay Smith is a guy who can be a developmental piece, but what does he bring to the offensive line room?
Yeah, it's a fourth round pick. You've got a chance to hit on a starting left tackle, which isn't, you know, usually you got to take those guys in the first couple of rounds. So Deontay's got, I don't have his measurables right in front of me now. I actually left him in the car this morning, but I mean, he's a guy with like an 86-inch wingspan. It was one of the longest wingspans in the draft, and he's got tremendous feet. So anytime you have that combination of length and feet, you've really got a chance to play on the left side. Sky's the limit. He's one of the highest upside guys in this year's draft. So came down here, did some really nice things in practice, and then got hurt. I forget what it was, maybe a wrist during the week, and he couldn't play in the game, but he wanted to. I mean, it really, he was pained him not to play in the game, but you know, we're talking like year two, year three, they could really have something there. But yeah, he's a nice addition, as is Wyatt Hubert. I mean, I think Wyatt Hubert's got a chance to be one of the steals of the draft. Getting Wyatt in the seventh round, I never for the life of me thought Wyatt would go in the seventh round. He's a known quantity. You know what you're getting. Really good football player, productive, stout, combative, can get to the quarterback. He's another guy that we kicked inside it, you know, at three technique down here in Mobile quite a bit, because we really went heavy at the edge position, because there were so many, the edge class was deeper than the interior D-line class. So Wyatt took a lot of reps in there and did a nice job. So, yeah, I mean, seriously, of all the guys that went in the seventh round, I thought that was a heck of a pick. I thought Wyatt's floor would be the fifth.
We'll end it with this, another offensive weapon. The Bengals moved on from Gio Bernard last year, and they had to find some replacement in the running back room. Obviously, they want to get more reps out of Joe Mixon. But Chris Evans with a little bit of drop. I know he had some academic issues at Michigan, but were you surprised with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great story. It's a great success story. The guy had whatever it was, 11 carries this year at Michigan. A lot of people probably thought we were nuts for inviting him to the Senior Bowl with that kind of production. But he'd had, you know, this guy was Mr. Football coming out of high school in Indiana. He'd had enough tape over his first 3 years there at Michigan where you saw what he could do. I mean, good athlete, 215-pound guy with really nice feet and cutting ability. And then really what makes Chris an intriguing player is what he can do in the pass game. So it's not just out of the backfield. He can legit line up in the slot and run receiver routes. He's got extremely natural hands. So just a great story. I mean, you talk about his academic stuff. you know, I'm sure you've covered it there in Cincinnati in that market, and what he did to work three jobs and work with a local high school as a coach and stick it out, you know, there in Ann Arbor for a year to get back in good standing with the school in a time where a lot of kids are just entering the portal or, you know, and just bailing. I mean, Chris faced that adversity head on and came through it. So of all the guys that we brought to Mobile, really happy for Chris, because you know, even his agent reached out after Cincinnati picked him, and he said he would not have been drafted if it weren't for the Senior Bowl. And you know, Chris is a great young, you're going to love him. You're going to love him. And he's really versatile. So in the sixth round to get a versatile offensive piece like that, I thought was another great pick for the Bengals.
Yeah. After that pick, the Bengals coaching staff said he wouldn't even been on the radar if it wasn't for the Senior Bowl. I know there's no off season for you, but what's going on right now? How do you prep for 2022 going into next year?
Well, the guys in house here, our scouting assistants, have done an awesome job. They've been on the Power Five schools since about 2 weeks after our game, so middle of February, and we are just finishing up the independents right now. Like, I think they said they were on Liberty and BYU this morning, so we're just finishing up all the Power Fives, and so we're working our way through it. And I've got a ton of catch up to do, Lindsay. I'm staring at a blank board right now. The guys took all the names off the board, all the cards off the board yesterday. And so, yeah, that's always a yearly reminder that we got a lot of work to do, but we got a great head start, and it's just going to be a busy summer.
I can't wait to check it out. Jim Nagy, executive director of the Senior Bowl. Thank you for taking some time to join us.
Yeah, absolutely, Lindsay. Thanks for having me back on.